Paul O'Sullivan and I go back a long way. I was looking through pictures the other day of protesting in London in Trafalgar Square, where Paul was standing with a South African flag and saying, Zuma must go. Well, it's ancient history now, but right now South Africa is in another of those crisis points. Paul O'Sullivan is putting his hand up to say, hang on a minute, everybody, you're not getting it right. Here's the real story. Paul is, he calls himself a certified fraud examiner. He is well known as an ace forensic investigator and crime fighter, whistleblower, and of course, the founder of Forensics for Justice. Well, Paul, it all kind of started about a month ago when Lieutenant General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi, the head of the South African Police Services in KwaZulu-Natal, had that bombshell expose where he said that the criminal justice system and politicians were infiltrated by criminals, in essence. You came out as Forensics for Justice to say, let's have a commission of inquiry, and Masemola and Mkhwanazi, the two leading players in the police services, need to be suspended immediately. Well, Cyril did half of that. He did appoint a commission of inquiry. The suspensions haven't happened, but for your troubles, you were then brought onto social media and attacked by the head of Action SA in Parliament, Athol Trollope. We've had an interview with Athol Trollope at the time. I did ask if you would like to talk before he was on air. You declined, but now you're ready to respond. And my goodness, an 18-page press release, which we will be publishing on BizNews a little later with lots of details. But let's just start with the Trollope story first, and then we'll go on to your concerns over Mkhwanazi. What actually sparked what to many people seems to be an unseemly fracas in the public between yourself and the Action SA man?
Well, first of all, just to correct one thing, I don't call myself a certified fraud examiner. I am a certified fraud examiner, and I have been for over 20 years. And I have the distinction of being the only certified fraud examiner in the world to have won the award Certified Fraud Examiner of the Year twice. So I just want to set the record straight on that, because I know there are others that would join in and call me a self-appointed fraud examiner. as Trollope refers to me as a self-appointed forensic investigator, the reality of the situation is I've never met Trollope in my life. He lied. I had the interview with you transcribed, and I went through it line by line. He lied to you 17 times when you interviewed him, and the first of those lies was that he met me briefly at a conference that you held in the Champagne Resort. And I was at that conference. I gave a presentation there on the first day. And because of my pressing diary at that moment in time, I literally came in, gave the presentation, had supper, slept overnight, and left the following morning at 4:30 in the morning. So there's no way he met me. I just didn't speak to him. I never had a word with him. I've never met the man in my life. I don't do social media. And I suppose the main reason I don't do social media is I just haven't got time for it. I work 7 days a week, on average between 14 and 18 hours a day. So I just don't have time to sit and look at what people are yakking about on social media. I just don't have time for it. However, a couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine brought to my attention some posts that had been put out on social media by Action SA in the form of Athol Trollope, the man I've never met. And I was quite surprised when I looked at his posts. The one post, he said, I still want to know how this guy inveigled his way into safety and security. Now, you know, I majored in English. Let me just move the computer a second because I put the documents underneath it. I majored in English when I was at high school. I understand the language extremely well. Inveigle means, quote, to persuade someone to do something in a clever and dishonest way, whether they want to do it or not. Now, a man I've never known starts posting defamatory matter about me on social media. I decide I want to find out what his game is. So first I do a little bit of research. And what do I find? I find that it's the policy. By the way, he lied to you about this as well. It's the policy of Action SA to support Nkunazi. And they even went so far as toy-toying in the street outside his office with signs holding up these big green Action SA banners saying, hands off Nkunazi. Now, they subsequent, and I've gone through, I've had one of my staff go through and pull out all the social media of Action SA, where it's crystal clear that they support Nkunazi to the hilt. And then you have Trollope saying things like, I failed to read the emotion of the nation, the mood of the nation. I haven't failed to read the mood of the nation at all. I'm fully aware of what the mood of the nation is. Unfortunately, we live in a country where crime is extremely high, much higher than it should be and much higher than it would be if we hadn't had a captured police service for the last 20-odd years. The police service hasn't been free of criminal capture at high levels since the day Jackie Celebi was appointed in the year 2000. So we've had quarter of a century of dirty management with dirty cops in the police service. And Forensics for Justice and myself, at our own expense, have gone to a lot of lengths to try and clean up the police service for no other reason than if we do have a clean police service and an ethical management in the police, we will have a lot lower crime in the country. I made the point last year several times that crime intelligence in South Africa, for the most part, has ceased to exist. Crime intelligence has become what it was under Richard and Luli, a family-run business full of nepotism and theft. And crime intelligence is the epitome of the police service in general. And when you have someone like Nkunazi, who's heavily involved with Kamalo of crime intelligence, and that's clear from seeing the media release that he did, where he was waxing lyrical about how good Kamalo is, and that Kamalo was project managing this event in Gauteng that resulted in the seizure of Kat Matlala's cellular phone. What he failed to point out is that Kamalo is a divisional commander of crime intelligence. Crime intelligence should not be involved in any operation whatsoever other than intelligence gathering. So I'm left puzzled as to why Kamalo led an operation to arrest Kat Matlala. I'm not saying Kat Matlala shouldn't have been arrested. There's no doubt he should have been arrested. In fact, he should have been arrested several years ago. If crime intelligence were doing their job several years ago, Kat Matlala would have been arrested long before he or anybody connected to him arranged for the murder of Babita Dikaran, the accountant in the health department that flagged the theft by various individuals from Tembisa Hospital. Now, it's the shortcomings in crime intelligence that has helped to bring this country to its knees. And if we turn the clock back, which is what I did, I went back to 2012. In fact, I went back further than that. I opened a complaint, a criminal complaint, against the then head of crime intelligence, a fellow by the name of Richard Ndluli. And I opened that complaint in 2009. And at that time, I alleged that Richard Ndluli had seen the crime intelligence secret services account. It's a heavy sentence, secret services account, so I just refer to it as the slush fund because that's what it is. Richard Ndluli saw the slush fund as his own personal piggy bank, and he was stealing from it left, right, and center. And that was in 2009. Nothing has changed. Here we are now, 16 years later, the theft is continuing, and the theft is being carried out by all the people that are running crime intelligence, including the hierarchy of the police, because it's been sanctioned by Massimola, the current commissioner of the police, and some of that cash is finding its way into the illicit operations being run by Mkhwanazi in KZN. And I'll come back to that later.
The let's problem just stick with for the moment, Paul, just for the moment, let's just stick with Athol Trollope. I want to get into more detail with Mkhwanazi and your insights there. But Trollope has charged you, officially charged you, laid a charge against you. Have you heard any more of that?
No, I won't hear anything more of it. He's made false allegations against me. He's done that. Who invites the media to go to the police station while you hobble in on your crutches and hobble out on your crutches and then brag about how you're attacking Paul O'Sullivan? He's attacking me for no other reason than he supports Mkhwanazi. He and Action SA together support Mkhwanazi. And the proof of that is in the lies that he told, the 17 lies that he told when you interviewed him. He just couldn't restrain himself from lying. Athol Trollope, without a doubt, is a very, very dishonest person who belongs to what I consider to be a very, very dishonest political party. We're talking about the same political party that quoted the following, and I'll give you a couple of points. The ANC are the devil, and they will never have anything to do with the ANC. They quoted that several times. They said that the ANC had approached them with a view to them joining the GNU, the Government of National Unity. And the response was, we'll phone you when we're ready. And then they did a media release saying they wouldn't be phoning them for 300 years. And they've recently said if they're invited to join the GNU, they will join the GNU. Action SA is the same party that said they will never work with the ANC because the ANC and a prosperous South Africa is not possible. And then what do? They join forces with the ANC to boot the DA out from running Shwane or Pretoria. And they also joined forces with the ANC to control Johannesburg. Now, how on earth can they, on the one hand, say they reject the ANC with contempt? That was their election manifesto, by the way, for the general elections. They said they will never work with the ANC. And then the latest debacle was where they joined forces with the ANC in April this year and say that they are going to work together with the ANC to get a 1% tax in a VAT increase brought in over 2 years. So we'll get 15.5% VAT this year, and next year it will go up to 16%. And the DA took this whole VAT increase thing to court. And of course, at the steps of the court before the matter was debated and ruled on, the ANC climbed down and said, okay, there won't be a VAT increase. And what do Action SA do? They come out and claim, here you see, we've stopped the VAT increase. Meanwhile, they were actually working with the ANC to increase the VAT by 1%. So the honesty of Action SA and Trollope is very, very questionable. And when the next elections come, I hope the people that voted for them in the last elections will remember that they lied to get their vote, and they will probably do the same at the next elections.
It's, a very clear indictment on what Action SA has been up to, and it's good to be reminded of these things, Paul. But let's move on to the area where you have a lot of insight, and that is in the criminal justice system. Mkhwanazi is seen in KwaZulu-Natal as a hero. Many people in South Africa are so fed up with the corruption, with the problems that are going on, with the high crime rate, that it's almost like they'll grab at any straw that has been offered. And Mkhwanazi has offered a seemingly strong option. Business in KwaZulu-Natal is 100% behind the man. Why shouldn't they be?
Well, to understand that, you need to look at the man. I think it was 2,070 years ago when the Romans thought Julius Caesar was the man. And they believed that Julius Caesar was going to bring Rome greatness, and the citizens of Rome would rejoice. And when Brutus and his clan knifed Caesar in the showers, everybody said, well, thank God we got rid of him. Hail Brutus. Hail Brutus. He saved us. And within a few short years, Brutus was also a dictator. So we have to be very careful what we wish for in South Africa. Now, it would appear that Mkhwanazi himself did not prepare that presentation, the presentation that he put out that day. I know this for a fact, because not only did he put the presentation out that day, his spokesman circulated it to a number of journalists, and one of the journalists shared it with me. And what the clowns that prepared that document forgot to do was to remove the metadata. And the metadata on the document clearly showed me the author of the document and where it was created. Now, it's no coincidence that on the 3rd of July, which was a Thursday before the Sunday, I had attacked Masemola and called for his resignation or dismissal if he did not suspend the 5 generals and 2 brigadiers that had been arrested the previous week. Now, I had opened criminal complaints against the 5 generals and 2 brigadiers, which all rotated. You may recall that you did an interview with me on the 5th of January this year, where I talked about the 29-year-old girl that worked at BMW that was parachuted into crime intelligence in the position of a brigadier. And she had serving police officials at the rank of captain and colonel who had to report to her now. And they had, most of them had 30 or 35 years police experience. They had more police experience than she had years on the planet. And now suddenly they're reporting to this young girl who knows diddly squat about policing. And I thought this was an absolute disgrace. But that was just the tip of the iceberg. Because at the same time, I also received information about a whole lot of other hanky-panky going on during 2024, not only in crime intelligence, but also within the head office of the police. And I'm talking about Masemola's office, where he brought people into his office, for want of a better expression, so they could be his mistress, because he's running extramarital affairs, not with one person, but with several. He's quite flexible. Now, when you've got a police commissioner who can't even look after his own personal affairs, you can imagine what's going on in the police service. Then I look at Mkhwanazi, and I looked at the links between Mkhwanazi and Masemola. And that took me back to 2012. Now, In 2011, Richard and Lulli had been put back to work by the then crooked commissioner of police, a fellow by the name of Beccicelli. Beccicelli had put him back to work illegally because he'd been suspended. So I sat down with the Helen Sussman Foundation and Freedom Under Law. And Rampella was the signatory of the application that was brought in the court. I helped fund that application. And the application was brought to set aside the reappointment of Richard Lulli as head of crime intelligence. And he was resuspended by the court. So once he was suspended, soon after that, Beccicelli was suspended. Beccicelli was suspended for an inquiry to consider his fitness to hold office because of his alleged involvement in, shall we say, dodgy lease on police buildings, where a lease was signed with the owner of a building who didn't own the building. And on the strength of the signed lease, the owner of the building then went out and got bank finance to buy the building and make a stinking profit along the way. The lease was cancelled. Beccicelli got fired. The owner of the building, the original owner of the building, unbundled the sale because there was no money to pay for it, and the whole thing collapsed. And Beccicelli was suspended, and they appointed an acting commissioner of police. And that was a fellow by the name of Mkhwanazi. So he was now acting commissioner of police. At the same time, Mkhwanazi appointed Masemola, who's now the chief of police. He appointed Masemola as the acting head of crime intelligence. Now, in those days, the crime intelligence slush fund budget was 98 million rand per annum. Now, that means there's a secret services account where they can spend money on stuff which is unaudited. Nobody knows where the money's being spent or how it's being spent, and there's no controls whatsoever. And in 2012, it was 98 million a year. But with all the goings on with Richard and Lulli, Richard and Lulli was so concerned about his own affairs, and because his sidekick, a fellow by the name of Netta Mosela, he had been suspended as well. Nobody actually had access to the slush funds. And because of this, by the last month of the year 2012, when the budget of 98 million was about to expire, Masemola suddenly realized, together with Mkhwanazi, that hang on a minute, we've only spent 60 million out of the slush fund this year. We're 38 million rand short. We better spend it, or the money's going to be lost, gone back to Treasury, because that's the way the police budget works. What you don't spend in a year, it goes back to Treasury, and your budget is amended the following year. So what did they do, the pair of them? They went out and bought 35 million rands worth of luxury cars and shared them out amongst the management of the police. Now, that was 13 years ago. That's 35 million rands of taxpayers' funds being divvied up in luxury cars, Jeeps, Land Rovers, BMWs, fancy cars. So you've got all the police driving around now. Well, those cars are probably long gone because they drive like hooligans, but they fit them all with blue lights and then they go around like that. Now that guts me as a citizen to think that my taxes are being spent, money taken from the slush fund so that cops can drive, senior cops, by the way, not junior cops. If they were sergeants and constables, I might applaud the move, but they're not. They were all senior cops at the rank of general. And here they are driving around these luxury cars. And that wasn't the end of it, because it became apparent then that Mkhwanazi and Masemola were joined at the hip. And the next time I found them together was when they went on an overseas trip with a police supplier to Germany to look at bulletproof equipment. Now, why would you have to have two lieutenant generals at taxpayer expense, although I'm not sure if the taxpayer paid for it, it may have been the police supplier, and off they go to Germany in 2016 And when they come back, they've both got beautiful Louis Vuitton bags gifted to them by that police supplier. The same police supplier is on trial today with the ex-commissioner, acting commissioner Pashlani for corruption involving hundreds of millions of rand. Now, that police supplier then hadn't been charged. Nobody knew he was corrupt, except Masemola and Mkhwanazi. They knew he was corrupt. Why did they know? Because they had received bags, Louis Vuitton bags, which retail in this country for between 70 and 100,000 rand. Now, as gifts for their wives. And I asked the question, when you got back to South Africa, Mkhwanazi and Masemola, did you conceal the bags in your luggage, or did you stand at customs and say, listen, I was given this bag, it's worth 3,500 euros. How much tax do I have to pay on it? Customs duty. So they flatly refused to answer the questions as to whether or not they paid any customs duty. The next question is, did they then go to their office and take the gift register and fill in on the gift register that this fellow Kistia had given them a Louis Vuitton bag each for their wives? Did they give the bags to their wives, or did they give them to their girlfriends? Where are those bags today? Those are the sort of questions that we have to ask. But we go a bit further than that. If you look at the presentation which Mkhwanazi did to the media, the presentation was psychologically planned by him and Masemola. They joined at the hip, these two. And there's a third party involved in that exercise, and that's Khumalo, the head of crime intelligence, who, by the way, hasn't been suspended. Not one of the five generals, the two brigadiers, who've been arrested for corruption and fraud and serious offences, not one of them have been suspended, which is very, very strange, because police regulations make it clear that if you're a senior manager and you get arrested on an offence like that, you're supposed to be suspended pending a disciplinary inquiry. Nothing of the kind has happened. They've all been redeployed to other positions. And in the case of the 29-year-old brigadier, she's been told you have to wear a uniform now and you're in charge of visible policing in a part of Pretoria. So you've got a 29-year-old brigadier who previously worked at BMW, never had any police training, never worn a uniform in her life, unless maybe she was in the Girl Guides as a child. And now she's wearing a brigadier's uniform, and she doesn't even know how to salute, to the extent that when one guy saluted her, she saluted with the wrong hand. Now that is what's in charge of the visible policing in a large section of Pretoria. And that leaves me realizing that our police service is in a mess. And it's in a mess, and has been in a mess for 25 years. And I partly blame that on the Sondo Commission, who had a very good opportunity to dig in and get to the bottom of the capture of the police service. And when the Sondo Commission, in its dying days, decided to drop the investigations on what it called the law enforcement threat, there was a huge sigh of relief within the police service, because effectively what happened was everybody said, wow, we got off the hook. And since the Sondo Commission finished, I've called several times, including on your platform, I've called for a judicial commission of inquiry to carry on where the Sondo Commission left off with the capture of the police service. Because you've now got people like Masemola making lateral appointments into his office, and then promoting the people, lateral appointments at the rank of brigadier, then promoting them to major general for no other reason than he wants to sleep with them. Let's look at Mkhwanazi. Let's look at him in some detail. Because what happened was, after I vocally spoke out and said, no, Mkhwanazi needs to be stopped, apart from Atul Trollope and Action SA and others joining the bandwagon of supporting Mkhwanazi and attacking me, they were blind. They didn't realize that they've actually been fooled. You don't get dressed up in combat gear if you're a divisional commissioner or provincial commissioner. You don't dress up in uniform that you used to wear 10 years earlier when you were in the task force. You don't wear uniform you're not entitled to wear and have all these armed troops with masks on behind you. That's a big display. That was meant to psychologically gain an advantage for the citizens and the people in South Africa that could not see that the emperor is not wearing clothes. In fact, they're so led by that bravado and that so-called whistleblowing that he did that they completely failed to see through the man. The man is nothing more than a criminal. And what he's been doing is usurping the police service for his own ends. His contract is due to run out soon. It'll be very interesting to see what should happen, because in theory, when his contract runs out, he should be put out to grass. It'll be very interesting to see whether or not he's going to be put out to grass. What I did notice, and I had his media release transcribed, professionally, properly transcribed, and I've gone through it. And what I did notice, but he makes it clear in that media release that he supports Kamala. He attacked me in the media release. He didn't mention my name. He said, there's a citizen whose name I'm not going to mention who's called for the suspension of these generals in crime intelligence without going through the disciplinary process. Well, excuse me, they were arrested and charged 5 weeks ago, almost 6 weeks ago. Actually, it will be 6 weeks ago tomorrow. Why haven't they been suspended? And he then waxes lyrical about how good Kamala is. Well, I don't think it's any coincidence that the so-called political killings task team in KZN, groups of them that stay for nights and weeks at a time at the Oyster Box Hotel, where the rooms are 10,000 rand a night. Where's all the cash coming from? The money's coming from somewhere for these men to be living these lives of luxury and drive around in luxury cars. And by the way, many of them drive around in a private capacity with their blue lights on. What are they doing exactly? They're living a high life, and the money is coming from, wait for it, the Secret Services account run by Kamala and Lushaba. The same Lushaba, who's the CFO, by the way, who stole money from the account to pay for a prostitute, served her a drink at his house, another extramarital affair, and then she spiked his drink, or he just fell asleep after having been serviced by her. And while he was asleep, she stole his firearm, his police-issued firearm, and his police-issued laptop, and she made off with it. So what did he do? This is now the man that's managing. It's no longer 98 million, by the way. It's now 600 million per annum, the slush fund. Now, it's grown from 2012 at 98 million to 600 million today, and there's no accountability. I have looked at the 2024 Auditor General's report on the slush fund, and he says it's impossible to audit because they don't comply with the regulations. They're concealing where the money's going. 600 million a year. And this is all now being protected by Mkhwanazi. What's his motive in supporting Kamala, who belongs in prison? And then I couldn't understand it until after going public with my allegation as to why Masemola and Mkhwanazi should both be suspended, I had some whistleblowers reach out to me, and they were from KZN, and they made it clear that actually the success rate of the police in KZN is due to the fact that Mkhwanazi has instituted a shoot-to-kill policy, And that when they go to a alleged crime scene or location where they expect to find criminals, they go front and back and shoot everybody on sight, whether they're armed or not. Now, I interviewed and took sworn statements, and then I started doing an analysis. And when I look at the analysis, I find that in the KZN province, 95% of the time, whenever there's an interaction between the police and criminals involving firearms, all of the criminals are fatally wounded. Not one survivor, not one. Now, you call that what you want. I call it extrajudicial killing or murder. And it's been going on since 2020 in KZN. And that's why the people of KZN love Nkunazi. But be careful what you wish for, because occasionally they've shot the wrong people and murdered the wrong people. And then what they've done is they've taken firearms that they have in their possession, unlicensed firearms, and fired a couple of shots with them and put them with the bodies of the people they've just murdered. And if that's the type of policing we want in South Africa, be careful what you pray for. We're going to end up like Mexico or Brazil, where the police hit squads go out at 3 o'clock in the morning and wipe out the criminals and leave their bodies in the streets. And the following morning, the people find the bodies there. They know the police did it, but they don't know why. And there's no investigation. There needs to be a thorough investigation into these allegations. This judicial inquiry that's going to take place, I'm going to supply all the evidence that we have. And I can guarantee the people of South Africa that when that judicial inquiry is over, the knight in shining armor, the savior of Gotham City, that calls himself in combat uniform, Lieutenant General Nkunazi, the people will not be supporting him the way they are doing today. And before I go, Alec, I want to make one thing clear. I have no motive. I am not a police official. I am not a police spokesperson. I am a South African. I have skills which many South Africans don't have. I picked those skills up many, many years ago in overseas. I've been in law enforcement for 50 years, 5 decades of law enforcement. My time started in counterterrorism activities as a late teenager. And I've been playing this game for many, many years. There's been multiple attempts on my life. I've been shot 3 times in my life, by the way. Two of those times when Athol Trollip was still at high school, and he has the gall to come round and say, how did this man inveigle his way into safety and security? The last time I was shot on duty was in 1996. The person that shot me died from a single bullet through the heart, because that was the last thing I did before I fell down. Now, after that, I transferred to a peaceful policing function at the border police at Johannesburg Airport. And that's where the fun and games began. I arrested a fellow by the name of Glenn Agliotti for smuggling counterfeit goods. And the docket vanished, the goods were released, and then I found that Jackie Celebi was involved. So I laid a formal complaint against Jackie Celebi. One thing led to another, and I was no longer in the police. I joined AXA. I was head of security at all the airports in South Africa. And in that role, I found that there was a corruptly awarded security contract with a company called Kusalani Security. So I decided to cancel the contract worth 100 million rand a year. They employed 5,000 men at 10 airports. I cancelled the contract, and the next thing I get a phone call from André Price telling me The Commissioner Celebi says, I can't cancel the contract. These are national key points and they fall under the police. And I said, you're wrong. They're national key points and they fall under the army. And they've appointed me as the national key point officer. I'm in charge of security at all the airports in South Africa and I'm cancelling the contract. It was then taken to the High Court by Kosalani Security and the High Court found in AXA's favour and the contract was cancelled. Within months, Jackie Celebi was then having secret meetings with the board and the new CEO of AXA and my contract was terminated because my security clearance was revoked by the police, by Jackie Celebi. So I was no longer allowed to be a national key points officer. I was no longer allowed to sit on the National Security Committee of the airports, the National Aviation Security Committee. So I lost my job at AXA. Fortunately, I had property interests. I always have had since I came in this country. I have a lot of properties I'm buying and selling all the time and developing. So I decided, okay, I'll turn my back on that work and I'll get stuck into my property development. But simultaneously, I decided I'm going to go after Jackie Celebi. So I penetrated the crime syndicates that Jackie Celebi had his finger in and I got very good evidence. And in 2004, I turned it over to the Scorpions in a 4-hour meeting I had with Harry Nell. In 2007, the head of the Scorpions was suspended by the then president, Thabo Mbeki, because he wanted to stop Jackie Celebi from being arrested. Needless to say, Jackie Celebi was arrested. He was charged, found guilty, and sentenced to prison for 15 years. He never served a day in prison. He passed away before he could get there. But then I decided during the trial, I picked up that a lot of senior cops were helping Jackie Celebi get off the hook. So I decided to go after them. At my own expense, at my own free will, nobody paid me. I had nobody was giving me anything for any of this. Simultaneously, while all that was going on, I went after a nasty gangster called Radovan Krejcer. Nobody paid me for that either. I did it because I'm a citizen of South Africa. And if a country is good enough to live in, it's good enough to fight for. Krejcer tried to kill me 5 times that we know of, possibly 6. Dirty cops have tried to kill me 6 times in the last 10 years. So why on earth would I want to come out and say bad things about a man like Mkhwanazi if I don't believe they're true? I say, everybody take a deep breath. Stop thinking that Mkhwanazi is Batman. He's not. I'm saying he's a criminal, and you are all going to find out in the very near future.
Paul O'Sullivan, Certified Fraud Examiner, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.